Welcome to Parents Perspective. So, should he go to his friend and tell him what he overheard? Mandy asked her sixth grade class. A hand went up. Yes, Brad?
I think it depends, he began.
On what?
On whether he wants to get beaten up by the other guys.
A chorus of laughter followed. All right, class, replied Mandy. Settle down. Deanna, what did you want to say?
Well, I'm really wondering whether the guys the boy overheard were really planning to go to the game and leave him there, she responded.
He'd find out on game day, Greg offered.
But then it'd be too late, commented Megan. I think his friend should tell.
They sound like a group I wouldn't want to be friends with, Samantha added. Maybe he should be more careful choosing buddies.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about teaching ethics to children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is a strong proponent of children's ethical development. Adriana Murphy teaches 7th grade social studies and 8th grade ethics at Greenacre School in Rockville, Maryland. She is director of service learning and dean of the 7-8 unit. She's had 2 books published, Highly Effective Character Education Programs in Independent Schools, and 21 for Teens, Case Studies for Students in Grades 7 through 12. Adriana has also worked as a curriculum developer for the U.S. Institute for Peace and crafted a toolkit for middle school educators. She's a step-parent of 2 girls, 15 and 13. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Adriana.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Why should children have ethics education?
Well, I think one of the first things that we should know about ethics education is that it's actually an academic subject. I think a lot of people confuse ethics education with the warm and fuzzies. You know, if we're teaching students how to be nice, or if we correct students about sharing, that we're doing ethics education. And that's all true, but that there's actually an academic essence to ethics as well. It's about thinking from different perspectives. It's about figuring out how to make decisions in a variety of ways, not just right versus wrong, which is sometimes, I think, how we tend to think about ethics. It's about how do I make choices between 2 rights? So, for example, truth versus loyalty, as in the case, for example, in the story earlier. Or, for example, how do I make a decision when 2 of my core values are at play? So trust versus loyalty, for example. Or what happens when I have some money and I want to give it to 2 charities? And they're both equally important to me, but I only have money to give to 1. Sometimes these are the difficult decisions that kids have to make or that we'll make later on as adults. And we have to develop a system and a clear system for how to make those decisions.
Well, if parents are doing their job, what's left for schools to provide in this area?
That's a great question, because we often think that the role of the home and the role of the school should be divided, right? That what gets done at home is something that's different than what's done at school. And I think that it's important for parents and schools to work together. Often what we do at school is reinforcing what's done at home. I would like to think that parents who are encouraging their kids to be collaborative, to listen to others' perspectives, those are the same things that we're trying to teach kids at school. On the other hand, I also think that parents are spending less and less time with kids. We've got double income families. We've got parents who are spending anywhere between 30 and 50% less time with kids. And so somewhere in there, we've got to pick up the slack. I think we can see that there's fewer and fewer leaders out there for kids to look to for how to become ethical. And the schools have to fill in the gap. The other thing is that when parents and schools work together, they can share information. The work doesn't have to be either or. There's actually joint work that can be done together. And so when we want kids to be thinking critically and develop the academic skills that go with ethical thinking, those are the sorts of things that can be done at school, and we can have parents sort of provide them with the early values that will later be reinforced in school.
It's interesting that we seem in our heads to have this dichotomy between academic values and ethical values, and very often they have been divided and there hasn't been a mix. I'm thinking there's a very famous factoid that evidently some huge percentage, like 95% of the people who were at the WANSEE conference, which was Hitler's final solution, which was not real ethical, some huge number of those people there making the decision had PhDs.
Oh, right, sure. I mean, there were all sorts of tests done on Hitler and on a lot of his top soldiers to determine whether or not they were actually mentally ill. And in fact, no, they were making decisions that they thought were perfectly reasonable, which is another reason why I think we need to really be thinking about how we teach ethics. If we continue to teach it as just a warm and fuzzy subject, it doesn't gain any credibility. And I think we really need to be thinking about it as an academic subject. It's about thinking about decisions, not telling kids what decisions to make. And the metaphor I often use for parents and for families at back to school night is, if you think about that old cartoon where you have the angel and the devil on one side, that's how we've typically thought about moral reasoning. You know, one side says good, one side says bad, and that's sort of, you know, how we think about decision making. What we're trying to get kids to do now is to say, you know, there's more people in that conversation. In my class, we invite Aristotle to the table and we invite Kant to the table. And, you know, gosh darn it, we might have grandma at the table and we might have your peers at the table and we might have your family values at the table and we might have your coach at the table. You might have all these sort of different moral exemplars who are also coming to that conversation and making the decision process all of a sudden far more complex than just the little angel and the little devil.
So you're not teaching kids to put all this information and then come out with the answer.
Right. A lot of times there isn't one answer. A lot of times it's several answers. And what we have to teach kids to do is to decipher. And in fact, a lot of brain researchers are now saying that in the next 20, 25 years, deciphering and being able to decode situations is going to be the skill of the future. And so decision making, as we know it now, is becoming far more complex and far more sophisticated than just your typical right or wrong. It's far more gray.
At what age do kids really become aware of ethical versus unethical behavior?
It's funny because we all, when we have little kids, think of that wonderful stage at about 18 months, which lasts up to, who knows, maybe 25 years or so, where they say, mine. I have a little grandson now who's 18 months old, and his favorite word is mine, mine. And so it's very hard at that point to get him to be able to understand, well, no, the item in question is not necessarily his, and it belongs to his older brother, and he needs to give it up, and so forth and so on. And that's, I think, sometimes the beginning of this moral dilemma.
We know that at least by 3 or 4, or maybe 4.5, kids are aware that they're making some sort of choice. You know, that, yes, I should be sharing my toys with my sibling or with the kids at school. And no, I don't like it when somebody takes my toys away. But really, by about age 7 or so, they're aware that the decisions they're making have some value to them, that they belong to some sort of ethical code. And often the mistake that we make is that we assume that it's at age 7 when kids can make those decisions on their own. In other words, by about 3.5, 4.5, somewhere in that range, the foundations are there. We can teach kids, yes, you should be doing that. No, you shouldn't be doing that. This is something that we believe as a family. We believe in sharing. We believe in respect. We believe in trust. By about age 7, they do know better. But if we start teaching at age 7 that this is a family of respect, this is a family of trust, it's a little bit too late, actually.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on ethics for children.
The popular book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Adriana Murphy about teaching ethics to children. is learning about ethical choices different when children are in a group setting, sort of the Lord of the Flies kind of thing? It seems to me there's always the issue of group morality when you're getting a whole group together to discuss something. And I guess that could perhaps favor that herd instinct where then the kids really are sort of embarrassed into not making individual choices and going along with the group. And I think, you know, you see this certainly with grown-ups, but you also see it with children when nobody's going to speak up to say, well, I don't think that's a very good idea. Very often, I think, isn't there a danger that individual voices don't get heard?
Sure. You know, it's funny. I posed this question to my students the other day just to see what they would say. And they said, you know, one of the things that we appreciate about learning ethics in a group setting is the perspective taking. We can get ideas about how to handle situations from our peers that we might not have thought of if we were just doing this one-on-one. On the flip side, we can also get validation. So a lot of times kids will think that they're handling something and they're doing it just on their own. And they think, I feel like I'm so alone in making this decision. And then they realize that there's other kids in their class who are facing the same things. And they realize that they're not so alone, that there's actually other people who share the same core values as they do. And that can be tremendously empowering. There's some research out there that shows that when kids actually are around other children who share the same ethical values as they do, they're actually more likely to continue doing the right thing. And so sometimes just being aware that other kids are facing the same things and making the same sort of ethical choices that they're making will actually empower kids to continue doing the right thing. By the same token, it's also great to have a variety of perspectives. So when kids are around other kids and they realize, oh, wait, I wouldn't have handled it that way, but I kind of see where that person is going, they also realize that there's multiple ways of handling a situation and not just one. And that, I think, can also be helpful to kids and provide them with other avenues to handle decisions.
Would you describe for us the school program you use for 7th and 8th grade students?
Sure. I mean, I think the first thing we do is we trust kids. You know, we sort of believe that they already come to us with a knowledge of right and wrong. And our school has a long history of social action. So we first trust kids. And then the second thing we do is we expect them to do good things. We expect them to make the world a better place. We expect them to take social action. So I think I want to start with sort of that premise. And that's something that can be modeled not just at our school, but in families too. When you trust kids and you expect them to do good, they'll live up to that. So we also believe that part of living an ethical life means that you have to take some risks. You have to put yourself out there for other people. And so our program is in part sort of theoretical. We teach kids about various ethical frameworks, how you can make a decision from a variety of different perspectives. And then the sort of second half of the course is, okay, so now that you have all these different perspectives and different tools for making decisions, go out there and do it. Kids have individual service projects that they design and follow through on. Kids have something that we're going to do a little bit later in the year called the 30-day challenge, where they decide they want to improve themselves or their community for 30 days, and they're going to do something that involves themselves or the community for 30 days, and they're going to journal about it and figure out, how am I using my gifts? How am I using my talents to do something better for somebody else? But at the very core of the program are these two essential questions, which is, what kind of person do I want to be? And what actions do I have to take to help get me there? There's an interesting article in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago by David Brooks, and he basically said that it's not enough to be empathetic, right? You have to take action. And I think that our course really speaks to that. It's nice that you feel for somebody else, but that's really not enough. And so we believe that kids have to basically put their money where their mouth is.
What kinds of things have kids come up with in past years?
We've had kids design service projects around green initiatives. So kids have done different environmental projects. Last year, we had a huge bike safety program. There was a student who had a neighbor who was hit by a car. in his neighborhood. And so he lobbied, along with some other students, his local neighborhood organization to actually move the stop sign that was in front of the crosswalk in his neighborhood back so that cars would actually stop sooner than where the crosswalk was, since he thought that that's actually what contributed to this child getting hit. We've had kids organize bike drives. We've had kids work with senior citizens at different assisted living facilities. We've had kids who've also made it a little bit more internal, who've realized, you know, I realize I keep interrupting people. I keep making the lives of others a little bit more challenging than I need to. So I'm going to work on self-control. I'm going to work on trying to monitor my airspace. And it's a different kind of service project because it's a little bit more internal.
And how do you evaluate something like that?
Well, it's hard. So a lot of it is based on self-reflection. A lot of it is based on the quality of the writing, on those sort of academic skills. But a lot of it is also based on what kids are seeing as their growth. I'm more interested in what kids think and believe their growth to be and how they are asking their peers what they think their growth is.
So there's the interaction of that, the reality check.
Yeah.
It's part of it.
Absolutely.
That's interesting. Any surprises out of all these?
Some of them, yeah. Some of them have asked their peers how they think they're doing, and the kids are always more honest, I think, than than I am. And the kids have said, you know, you're making a little bit of progress, but you still got work to do. And then they keep going. So it's been good.
What kinds of ethical dilemmas were of particular interest to your students going forward? Are they brought up from their own experiences?
Sure. You know, there's lots of specific ones, but I think what I'll do is I'll break them down into more broad dilemmas. I think the key ones are being someone I think my parents want me to be or being someone I think my peers want me to be. Turning a friend in who's done something wrong versus remaining loyal to that friend. Deciding to lie about something that they've done wrong versus telling the truth. Sometimes sticking up for a friend at the cost of being a social pariah. Sometimes some of them have faced things like, do I want to do something that goes against what my family believes and has raised me to do, like experimenting with drugs or alcohol, something like that. And, you know, these are the choices that they're faced with.
And they bring them up and they talk about them.
They bring them up and they talk about them.
Do you get the sense that they feel either validated or supported in some way in their struggle?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly why an ethics course is needed in schools across the country, because I think that the more that they practice making decisions ahead of time, the more that they talk about how they would tackle a decision ahead of time, the more likely they're actually able to make that decision when the decision comes. And the more insight they get from their peers and from others about how to make that decision, the better able they'll be to make those decisions.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on ethics for children. Parents' perspective needs you, your feedback, your opinions, and not least, your donations that help with the cost of producing this award-winning program.
Visit us online at www.parentsperspective.org and click on to Give Direct, I Give, or eBay at Mission Fish. Please help us continue to help you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Adriana Murphy about teaching ethics to children. How can parents more effectively integrate ethics teaching into everyday family life?
There is one thing that we have seen so many times and is truly awful when parents take children out into public and do things like at a movie theater and say to the child, oh, if they ask how old you are, you say you're under 8. That kind of thing is, you know, it's certainly a teachable moment if you want to play it straight and be honest. And it's also a teachable moment if you're not honest. And that's pretty heavy stuff for kids.
There's three buckets that I like to talk about. There's the modeling bucket. There's the discussing issues with kids bucket, and there's the practice bucket. So in the modeling bucket, I would say that there's different things parents can do. There's obviously serving as a good example, but within that, there's teaching your child from the time that kids are really young that no one is better than anybody else. There's getting in touch with your own prejudices. And I think being able to talk about that with your kids openly is a really great step. Refusing to allow discriminatory remarks of any kind in your presence is a great tool. If you want your child to feel for others, you have to demand that they actually do that. It's not enough to just talk about respect. You actually have to demand it from your kids. So discussing issues with kids. I love TV, and I think TV is a great way to actually defer some of the stuff that's going on with kids onto the characters in TV. Use TV as a way to talk about ethics. Ask questions like, what do you think was going on with that character? Or do you think that he or she made the right decision there? What do you think would have been a better decision? Do you think that he or she was acting in a way that you would act? Do you think that's something that our family would approve of? It's also important to discuss what your family core values are. Do your kids actually know that you value respect? Do your kids actually know that you value trust? Do your kids actually know that you value honesty? Or do you think that they do? How do you know that? And then practice. So I think there's no better tool or no better way to boost a kid's moral intelligence than to actually go and stand up for something. So, you know, regardless of what the issue is, give them a chance to practice and to do it with you. As soon as they start taking a stand for something, they get that immediate practice. And then finally, when kids make an error in judgment, which they will lots of times, you know, be there for them. It's okay to make mistakes. It's also okay for them to know that they have parents who care about them. And give them plenty of room to make those mistakes and to make decisions. Kids are going to practice making decisions by making decisions. When kids have a chance to actually learn about how other people have made decisions, how you've made decisions, they become enthralled. They want to know how to do it. This doesn't come naturally, and I think sometimes we assume that kids just know how to make decisions, and we can't assume that they do. So we actually do have to teach it.
Can parents use things that are everyday news kind of things
Absolutely.
To help kids understand?
Absolutely. I mean, just the other day in my class, we used the Anthony Weiner trial, which was kind of an interesting case. And the reason why I used it was because, you know, he believed that he had done something wrong, but he didn't think that he had violated his oath of office. And so we were just talking about contract theory in class, and the kids wanted to know, well, did he break his social contract? And we got into this very big discussion about, well, what is a social contract? And do you have an obligation as a leader in your community to uphold things even if they're not expressly written? And yeah, they do. And so I think sometimes we can use the news, we can use, like I said, TV, we can use all sorts of everyday examples. And I would encourage parents to do so. Listen to the radio in the morning, not necessarily the music radio, but listen to news radio. It's a great opportunity if you drive your kids to school to have those conversations in the car. The car is a great place to have conversation with kids.
Well, this is clearly a conversation that could go on for a very long time, but we do have to close. And before we do, Adriana, what suggestions do you have for resources for our listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues we've been discussing?
Sure. For books, I've got two books that I love to use. The first is Bringing Up a Moral Child, A New Approach for Teaching Your Child to Be Kind, Just, and Responsible, and it's by Michael Shulman. There's another book called Good Kids, Tough Choices, How Parents Can Help Their Children to Do the Right Thing, and that's by Rushworth Kidder. On TV, one of my favorite shows that I like to watch at home is What Would You Do? It's on ABC. And then on the web, there's a great web resource by Michelle Borba, and you can find her at michelleborba.com. There's also the Center for Spiritual and Ethical Education at csee.org. And finally, the My Hero Project, if you're looking for great moral exemplars, and you can go to myhero.com to find examples there.
Well, you have certainly been a wonderful resource for us and for our listeners, and we hope that this is something that people will want to take to heart and do more about. So, Adriana Murphy, thank you so much for being with us today and helping us to understand the importance of ethics education for children.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The best way to get in touch with Parents Perspective is through our email, parentspr@gmail.com. And for the first person who's in touch with us after this show, there's an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just email us at parentspr@gmail.com. Give us your name and snail mailing address and mention show number 492. Tell us, if you can, also what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice, or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Evelyn Sachs Trust. Parents Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, and the show is made possible by your financial support. Thank you for your contributions. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay. Or you can send checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Our sound engineer is Kent Hitchcock. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.